Hey, Matthew Cause here, and this is part two of the second episode of the Matco and Cause podcast. Again, I am a dummy. I didn't realize on Audio Boom you could only record for 1 hour, which is why it was cutting out for people that were listening to the podcast earlier. So we've cut it up into two parts. We pick up the podcast with Bob and I taking your listener questions.
So top five movie monsters coming up in a moment. We got the big question coming up in a moment. But right now we asked you at home if you would be interested in sending us some questions. Maddie and I always love the interaction.
Yeah.
Love it. Whether it's the fun stuff like Jay's in six words or just questions or thoughts, comments, all of it. Please keep it coming. We got a Twitter feed now, which is at Macko and Cause.
Yep.
At the Macko and Cause podcast.
Mm-hmm. And of course, at Bob Mackowitz, and I'm MCause56. But yeah, shoot us your questions. We'll read the best ones on air. And
Do you want to fire a couple off, Maddie?
Yeah. We got a ton of them. I'm just pulling it up right now. Do you want to do sports or non-sports?
Let's do sports. We just came off of McChicken Talk.
That is true. At the Real Bigfoot.
Nice to see you practice before we got live.
That is true.
Initially live.
Tweets in, Bautista with another bat flip. As a fan, I think it's awesome and makes games more fun. Yes or no on MLB players showing emotions. I'll keep this quick. Yes, yes, and yes. We talked about it last week. There's nothing that annoys me more in baseball than players controlling emotion and controlling fun. And with Roger Goodell now allowing touchdown celebrations, baseball, you don't want to become behind NFL in terms of having fun. So yes, I'm in favor.
The idea that they're not supposed to celebrate in a way that's disrespectful to the other team is so ridiculous. And all of baseball's stupid unwritten rules. He threw the bat. Now I got to plunk him. He showed up my pitcher. Now I got to slide hard into second base to send a message. It's all so dumb. At some point, like, look, I get it. You have to live in this world. You're an athlete. It's a self-contained world. It's hard to become a professional. I get it. There's a code of ethics. But in the end, none of it matters if it's not fun.
Yeah.
I mean, this goes back to the Ottawa Senators. Can I pick up on this with a question that came in from Kurt?
Sure.
Who this was sent to me on Facebook. Kurt wants to know about the Ottawa Senators. Hey, guys, what do you think? Do you think the Sens can pull it off tonight and make it to the Cup final? God, I hope not.
Yeah.
God, I hope not. I mean, they're literally and openly saying what we've got to do is try to make this game seven as boring as possible.
Yeah. Where the biggest topic of conversation with the Senators is two things. It's either Erik Karlsson or it's how no one is still going to the games. You know, I mean, there was a couple thousand open, empty seats or still tickets still available before the biggest game, game six. And then that became a huge topic.
If they make the Cup final,
ugh,
is it a guaranteed sellout in Ottawa every night? The Cup final is a sacred thing. There's a difference between the conference final, which is a lot of fun, but the Cup final is almost like the Grey Cup. It's like it even goes beyond sports. Just everybody follows it.
Yeah. Yeah, I think they sell out, but the fact that we're even having that conversation, that we're having this conversation is remarkable. I think what should happen is that Leaf fans should buy all those seats and they should just do like, just boo. You know, Bobby Ryan scores, boo! You know, just Leaf fans should go by.
And they got Nylander and Marner highlights going on the Jumbotron during the game. Everybody in that. And that one where they roll out where everybody's scrapping and fighting and it's Wendell and Ty Domi, you know.
And then all the rich people are, you know, are not in their seats because they're in, you know, the Platinum Lounge.
I love that. By the way, just on Game 7 tonight?
Yeah.
I have no idea. Kurt, I would love to help you on this one, but a Game 7 is a coin toss. Just ask Bruce Boudreau.
Mm-hmm.
Do I bet against Craig Anderson? I don't feel comfortable doing that.
I will.
Really?
Yeah.
It's funny because last week I said there's no way Pittsburgh's going to lose this series, and you felt that Ottawa would win, and maybe now we're flip-flopping a little bit. I just think Anderson, I hate betting against goalies who get hot.
Matt Murray has last 101 shots. He's made 96 saves. So since taking the job back from Marc-Andre Fleury, Matt Murray's looked great.
And it reminds you of the Pittsburgh and Washington series in that game seven. And it's okay, well, Fleury outplays Holtby. Mm-hmm. And no, it's not even like Holtby is bad, but you let in one extra goal. That if you make that one little mistake, like game seven, who knows? As our dear friend who knows nothing about hockey, Jeff Merrick, likes to say, it's a frozen piece of rubber on a sheet of ice. It's hard to know what's going to happen.
I can tell you what's going to happen. Pittsburgh is going to win 4-2. Spoiler alert, I'm not going to spoil what happens in Alien, but I'm sorry to everyone watching the game tonight. It will be a 4-2 win for the Pittsburgh Penguins.
Be honest. You got the pentothal going right now. You're hooked up to the truth serum.
Yeah.
if it's Ottawa and Nashville, what percentage of that cup final do you actually watch? Sit down and watch, uninterrupted.
51%.
I'm going 40. Because the NBA, I don't know what the schedule looks like, but what if Golden State and the Cavs are scheduled up against them?
What do you mean the Cavs? You don't think... No, yeah.
Sorry, I jumped the gun.
You jumped the gun.
Spoiler alert.
Rightfully so. Yeah.
Ottawa and Nashville.
Yeah.
I'm going under 50 for how much of that final I'm actually watching.
And here's the thing. Everyone's just going to be... They're not going to be talking about the games. If it's those two. They're going to talk about Montreal trading Subban. Why did Montreal trade Subban? That has been more of a conversation than the Nashville going
it's
to the Stanley
so
Cup
true.
Final.
You're 100% right. The entire Nashville run in this country has been a platform for dumping on the Montreal Canadiens and Mark Bergevin.
Yeah, that's exactly what
it
is. I love
it. That is so true.
Yeah.
All right, any other questions come in? So thank you both. Who sent in the first one?
The first one.
Oh, yeah, you butchered the name.
Yeah,
that's right.
Real Bigfoot for foo. Here's my non-sports question for you.
Okay.
Comes in from Buffalo Phil. Send in a bunch of good ones. Who has portrayed the best Batman and the best Bruce? And I think this one is easy, but I would imagine we're both on the
same.
Okay,
so hang on a second. I want to make sure I understand the question.
Yeah.
It's a split. So I could pick a Bruce Wayne that I liked better than the portrayal of Batman.
Yes.
Because in a way, they're almost like two different characters.
Yeah.
Okay, go for it.
Yeah.
That's an interesting question.
It is an interesting one. The split is what makes it interesting. I think we both agree the best Batman is Christian Bale.
Unquestionably.
Yeah. The best Bruce Wayne, Michael Keaton. Rocks the black turtleneck. You know, is able to woo Kim Basinger. I am going to go. Because I think the Christian Bale Bruce, he was just so miserable. Just miserable throughout. So I'm going to go Michael Keaton, who seemed to at least some level, enjoyed being Bruce Wayne.
Have you seen the Lego Batman movie? Because clearly the best Batman.
Oh!
Clearly the best Batman is Will Arnett.
That's a good one.
Right?
Oh, I never thought about that.
My daughter and I, after seeing it, we talked to each other like Batman. Charlotte, do you want any popcorn? Yes, Dad, I'd like some popcorn.
Dad, take your hands out of my popcorn. Dad, I want at least one bite. Dad, I'm hungry.
Dad holds the popcorn. Dad bought the popcorn. Dad holds the popcorn. I've got 2 weeks left of popcorn. Then it's avocado toast for the rest of my life.
If you can afford avocado toast.
I think the toast is off the fly zone, yeah. But the avocado, I think, is probably pretty good. As for the best Bruce, isn't it Adam West? Kind of kitschy and ridiculous and puffy walking around in smoking jackets.
That feels like a hipster answer.
Yeah, it does.
It does feel like a hipster answer.
You know, Adam West was pretty good, though.
Adam West.
Doing the Batusi.
Oh, by the way, Adam West, who's in his mid-80s, has still got it. I heard him on the Lebatard podcast the other day. Hilarious.
We should tweet that out.
Oh, my God.
If you haven't heard it, we will tweet it out in honor of Buffalo Phil's question.
Yes.
Do you got any other ones, Maddie, or are we moving on?
Did you have a non... I think you had a non... Did you have one other question that you wanted to throw?
A non-one? Actually, it was posed by you. It's not really a sports question or a audience question, but it was thrown to you earlier today. Do we deviate from format here and get into your question of me from this morning's phone call?
Yeah.
Okay. I need a little bit of context to this one. So I'm getting ready to go to work. Sandra, my wife, is getting ready to go to work. And you know how it is that you don't necessarily, you're working in separate spheres and you run into each other every few minutes. So she runs into me after I got dressed and she goes, "Oh, you look really nice. Look at your little pants." Look at your little pants.
That is
I'm wearing gray jeans right now, and I think the point that she was trying to make is, you look like you lost a little bit of weight. You look skinny in those jeans. Look at those little pants.
You got emasculated in 5 words.
Unbelievable.
I mean, forget Leafs or Raptors or Blue Jays in 6 words.
Emasculation in 5 words.
And the question that I threw out is, did your wife just put you in the friend zone? Can your wife friend zone her husband? Because it felt like you got friend-zoned by, look at those little pants. Look at you. Look at you. I'm not looking at you at all in any sort of sexual way ever.
It was just the worst. I heard that, and I can't tell you what I said because we decided there'd be no swearing on this podcast.
Yeah.
But it wasn't good. And I felt like Little Lord Fauntleroy. Like, all of a sudden, I was the kid in Buster Brown, you know, with the little short blue pants and the hat, the big lolly, and a bow around my neck and a frilly shirt. It was the worst, Matt. So, yes, I believe, and because I've been married for almost 15 years and I've been with the same woman for 20, yes, a wife can put the husband in the friend zone.
Yeah.
And it happens all the time.
Yeah, you got friend zoned.
I really did.
You want to get to the big question?
Well, I think, do you want to do big question or you want to do top five first?
Ooh, I will do top five.
All righty then. Top five, if you've listened to Macko and Cause over the years, it was kind of more after my departure, but Maddie, when he took the show over creatively and ran amok with it, turned every third segment of the old radio show into top five lists.
Yeah, sorry, Tyler Hunt, producer. Yeah,
but they're great. So this week with Alien Covenant in the theaters and with Universal announcing the Dark Universe that it's going to build around its old movie monsters, creating a new movie franchise out of it. The question this week, top five all-time best movie monsters. That's Maddie, go for it.
All right, coming in at number five, the vampire. You get so many good Dracula movies, Dusk Till Dawn, Interview with a Vampire, Lost Boys. Coming in at number five for me is Vampire. Number four, Bob, or do you want to comment?
You go through it. You go through it in ascending order. And I like the way that we do it where you do your five and then I mock.
Yes. Coming in at number four, this is going to seem low, but is Alien. And the reason is there's just not a lot of personality with it. But number four is Alien from the Alien movies. And number three, maybe the most underrated horror movie of all time, The Thing. The monster from The Thing is truly terrifying because it would move from person to person. You didn't know who it was, help create this very just creepy atmosphere. You don't really fully see it till the end. Coming in at number two, with apologies to fast-moving zombies, slow-moving. Slow-moving zombies at number two from Shaun of the Dead, the original Dawn of the Dead, Night of the Living Dead. Hey, I love the fast-moving zombies as well, but there's a certain dread of just this, the zombies just coming at you like an ocean, like the water is just breaking at you, just slowly, eventually it will win. And coming in at number one, maybe controversial, the number one movie monster, Jaws. The shark from Jaws. And by the way, sharks themselves, a lot of great movies involving sharks. So number one movie monster, Jaws.
You finished?
Yep.
Matt, we're early into the podcast. It's only the second one, but I expect that's going to be the worst list that ever gets put together.
What are you talking
about? That's a terrible, terrible list. And I'm not saying that just to do the bit. That's a bad list.
That's a good list.
That's a bad list.
What is bad about that
list? The vampire is too generic. Is it Dracula? Is it the vampires from 30 Days of Night? It's too generic. That's like saying, you know, who's your favorite hockey player? The good centers.
In this age right now, Bob, of inclusivity, I am trying to bring in all the vampires.
We'll have to agree to disagree on that
one. Ooh, that's never a good
sign. Now, Alien, number four, because it has no personality. Are you nuts? The alien has nothing but personality.
It's got one personality. I'm angry.
Well, yes, but it's got so many looks. I mean, you know, it's drooling like it just came out of the dentist's office and its mouth is still frozen.
It's like a baby.
It's snarling.
It's like a baby. It's drooling and angry.
And what about that thing that pops out of the guy's stomach? Yep. Like, so there's different versions of the alien. And there's different movie aliens. The first one, it's like a haunted house. 1979, Ridley Scott.
Yep.
Spooky, mysterious, one alien, a team. Like, that's a ghost movie in a lot of ways. Mm-hmm. But then Aliens, Bill Paxton, Sigourney Weaver. It's a superhero team against all of these aliens, and all of a sudden they take on
the movie.
The blockbuster personality.
By the way,
Aliens has tons of personality.
By the way,
the design of H.R. Giger, genius,
yes.
If I might say so.
Yes.
Has an alien ever looked that scary before? Predator looks like...
That's why Predator didn't
Predator
make
looks
my,
like a
my
defensive back with, yes. With dreads.
It's Richard Sherman. Listen, here's the thing. Being in the top five is an honored list. I can tell you right now, everyone that made this list is very happy that they made it. Being at number four, there's so many also-rans that didn't even get close to the list. Aliens should feel honored.
All right. The Thing, a great movie, but is it really a great monster?
Yes.
Because the monster itself isn't really featured in that movie. 1982, directed by John Carpenter. A lot of that movie is the dread that you don't really know who the alien is hiding
and
inside
who creates that dread, but the alien itself. And Bob, being able to tell the year of the movie and the director does not suddenly give you special extra powers here. I see what you're doing.
I'm doing a Pierre Maguire where I'm giving you the junior stats
of
the
monsters.
So Everett Silver Tips, The Thing, a good player. Drafted, eventually went over to the University of Michigan.
Yeah.
All right. No, because, and this is the problem with Jaws. I agree with you that Jaws is a movie monster, but on my list, it's only number four because the shark itself isn't that great. It's the genius of Steven Spielberg. It's the genius of the USS Indianapolis speech. It's the dread that's created. But the monster itself, like, you don't have action figures of the Jaws shark. It has no personality.
Everyone had a rubber
shark. It was known
shark.
As Bruce. It was known as Bruce on set. That's true. 1975.
Yeah, that's great. Look who went to IMDb. Bob Backwitz did.
So right. It's a great movie, but you can't say it's the best monster. We're doing the best movie monsters, not the best movies about monsters.
These are my top five monsters. What's your five?
All right. The ones that you didn't throw. By the way, I like the zombies pick, by the way.
And by the way, I was a little more specific. Slow moving zombies.
Which I liked. I thought that was really good. Godzilla. How do you not mention Godzilla? Godzilla is the representation of fear of the nuclear age. The idea that it was created from testing nuclear bombs and it was nature run amok and man's ambition gone wild. It created an entire subgenre of monster movie. The idea of the giant monster run amok and destroying the town. Godzilla.
Godzilla was on my also ran.
Godzilla had a kids cartoon. Godzilla was a Saturday morning cartoon when we were kids.
Godzilla was confusing.
And he had a nephew named Godzuki.
Yeah, exactly. That's probably the reason why I didn't make my list. And then Mechazilla. And I mean, it had like the little small arms and it moved slowly. Sorry, I like Godzilla, but to me, Godzilla didn't fill me with dread. I never felt any dread about Godzilla.
And the number one movie monster of all time, and this is just an incontrovertible pick, Frankenstein. Frankenstein is the greatest movie monster.
Frankenstein over
1931, directed by James Whale, as acted by Boris Karloff.
Yeah. Over Dracula?
Yes.
Dracula would kick Frankenstein's ass in a fight.
But Godzilla would beat them both, so you can't use that as a criterion. It's fair. Not fair. It's not Alien versus Predator, which is underrated, by the way. Frankenstein, the pathos. He's neither good nor bad. He's this misunderstood soul. He's the original anti-hero in a lot of ways. Frankenstein's not the villain in his own movie. The doctor is for creating him. It's genius.
Pathos, misunderstood. Sounds like number five on my list of top five movie monsters. Vampire. Dracula.
Vampires aren't misunderstood.
Sure they are.
No, they go blah, blah, and they attack. Bela Lugosi wasn't misunderstood. He just had an accent.
Look at you thrown out. Like, that's your new nickname, is IMDb. Look at you.
I am dumb Bob. Yeah. IMDb.
By the way, Bob.
By the way, The Mummy with Boris Karloff, also very underrated.
It's a good
one. You know what's great about The Mummy? Mm. Because we're used to The Mummy being all wrapped up and it's the idea of bandages, but if you watch the old one, the original Universal Pictures one, he's just like really spooky. And he's a human and he's, you know, reincarnated and he uses magic, and usually monsters don't get to use magic. Listen to me nerding out.
Yeah, this is
I warned you that I was going to nerd out about this. Mm-hmm. You know, I love my monsters.
Bob, we are about 50 minutes in. 5-0. We got to get to the big question.
Oh, really? We're 50 minutes in?
We are 50
God,
minutes
we
in.
We talk too much. All right. So here's the idea behind the big question, and we'll wrap up after this. Maddie and I discuss a topic that is bigger than any one team or one player. It's something that touches on being a sports lover in 2017. And today, we go to the world of politics for our topic and the sports media and how they may interrelate. Now, you might have noticed that politics in the States is kind of polarized. You got your right, you got your left. And for whatever reason, the dialogue has really started around sports media as to whether or not, particularly ESPN, but sports journalism in general, has it lost its flavor with many Americans because it has become too liberal. Now, I think it's fair to say that covering sports has changed. You know, as a kid, we talked about toughness and grit, and hockey fights were fun, and that's been replaced by discussions of athletes' rights and concussions and workplace safety. So there is an element of change. There's no doubt about it. You know, the locker room was once a place of almost separate from the laws of the real world, whereas now we talk about fairness and understanding and compassion. So, question that we throw out as the big question this week. Sports media is changing. Can you say that it's become more liberal?
100%. Frank DeFord from SI says, we are much more liberal than we ever were before. Craig Calcaterra from Hardball Talk. It's a folly for any of us to think we're speaking for the common fan, and says, yes, I absolutely think we're left of most sports fans. Bob Lee said the same thing. And here's one stat I'll throw at you. According to the Federal Election Commission data between 2012 and today, there were 104 individual political contributions from ESPN employees. Of those, 80% went to Democratic candidates, 20% went to Republicans, and the ESPN, is it ombudsman or
ombudsman?
Ombudsman. Yeah, I can't pronounce that. Said so as
That's
well.
That's because you've never needed one before.
That
Matt.
Is that is
my
true.
Career. On the other hand, a little more checkered.
Yeah, CBC. said about ESPN, the company's perceived move leftward has had a stifling effect on discourse inside the company and has affected its public-facing product. So
those are some mighty pretty words, Matt. And if I'm the IMDb king, then clearly you Googled ESPN sports media articles.
I did some research.
Right?
Yeah, but I think, you know, how can it not be? I mean, who are the, beyond a couple people at Fox, who are the right-wing sports media people, where there's not a lot of right wing out there?
See, here's the thing, Maddie. I don't think that it's particularly liberal. I think there are examples of liberal writing, but if you're honest about the history of sports writing in general, this might be more true of the newspapers, but your dad was a great writer back in the day, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
When he covered a lot of sports for the Toronto Star.
Yep, literally. Star and the Globe, and yeah, he was all over the place.
So, you know, there's always been good writers, and there's always been people who have been interested in what we would call quote-unquote issues, but I don't know how anybody can call the sports media liberal.
Really?
Yeah, because they still cover leagues and they still protect owners. Like, ESPN may hire somebody who wants to do a piece on whether or not racial hiring is fair, you know, for general managers in the NFL, that's fine. But when it really mattered and they were covering concussions, which they did a lot, and then they killed their own expose and wouldn't even air it and let PBS run with it.
Mm-hmm.
Because in the end, they are not going to discredit and devalue the league that is their closest partner.
Yes.
Oh, so how can you call that liberal when, in essence, when push comes to shove, you're working with and for the owners?
That act was certainly one you would not consider liberal. But what is the main focus? I mean, owners now, you know, get taken down all the time. And Dan Snyder is roundly and always criticized. Lots of owners are. We hear less conversation about the greedy player. Now it's about the dumb owner.
See, that is true to an extent. But think back to the NHL lockout. And how much coverage was there out there in the mainstream media that really pushed what the players were talking about? You know, what I heard more often than not was the players have to understand that the owners have the leverage and that there's only so good a deal that they're going to get. That's not covering a labor dispute in a liberal way. That's basically saying
yes,
you're going to have to the owners because they hold the leverage.
Yes, it is, because they would lament how the owners had all the power.
Oh, I don't know
they
how much lamentation was going on, Maddie.
And by the way, what this is actually about ending lockouts is not about left or right. It's about, like, first off, the fans, they just want the games back. And the ones that are always going to crumble, unfortunately, are the players, because they don't have the leverage.
Maddie,
that's stating a fact.
You and I remember, Cebulski and I, mm-hmm. during the lockout, we would go on and we both tended to lean player. And we heard from people all the time, not necessarily within the media, but particularly listeners and fans, that
they wanted the games back.
They just want the players back. The players should just shut up, and they're rich, and they get what they deserve, and I don't make that much money, and they should be happy with what they have.
That was a selfish move by the fans. That wasn't because of my political ideology. And if we talk about the stories that get covered, the Colin Kaepernick story gets covered all the time. Part of that is because there is a political bent there.
Okay,
I'm glad it is. And when I say that the media is more, the sports media is more liberal, I don't mean that as a bad thing, just as a thing.
Okay, and that's fair. And that's actually a really important distinction. But Maddie, the Colin Kaepernick example is a great one, because there were plenty of people who clearly did not like what he was doing. Even people who were supposed to be neutral and simply calling games.
Where are the think pieces that were anti-Kaepernick? Find me one from a prominent writer beyond Jason Whitlock.
If you're going to look at think pieces, but how many times, look at talk radio. How many people out there came out and said, I love what Colin Kaepernick is doing, versus Colin Kaepernick has to understand that he is part of a team and he is throwing his team under the bus with his particular stand.
The media loves Colin Kaepernick, and they should. But I don't hear any media people. I hear very few media people being against Kaepernick, nor do I think they should be. Who are the right wing people in the media? Who are they?
There's fewer right wing columnists,
writers, people on radio, people on TV. I mean, Keith Olbermann had a show for ages.
Is Colin Kaepernick a quality backup in the NFL? And
yes.
Probably better than a lot of the names that are being bandied about right now.
Yes.
So in covering that story, if you were really going to cover it, wouldn't it be, why isn't he getting a job?
those stories are covered all the time. Mike Sando has a piece today at ESPN on it. It's covered all the time. And the issues of how much of this is about race, how much of it's politics. And then some people just break down how much of it's just, you know, his numbers, you know, over the last couple of years. To me, it's a no-brainer that the media is more liberal. The sports media is. And again, that's not a bad thing.
So here's my next point why I don't think it's necessarily liberal. Is all the stuff that you've talked about, I feel like this is the conversation in politics that's been hijacked wrongly in both directions. I would like to believe that a conservative in 2017 cares about things like gay rights or fairness in the workplace or gender equity. Mm-hmm. I would like to believe that these are not simply the issues that the left wing cares about and the right could give two bleeps about it. So in some ways, the left loves to reposition itself as the only place where you can have these dialogues meaningfully had.
Which
I think is a little unfair. Because I consider you conservative in a lot of ways, but you're socially conservative. You're fiscally conservative and socially liberal.
By the way, Liz Lemon's Duffy, I'm a fiscal liberal and I'm a social conservative.
Yeah, that's the.
And you're right. And I don't.
Like, is it liberal to discuss race in sport? Mm-hmm. Is it liberal? Just the act of discussing it, is that inherently in some way left wing? I don't think so.
I don't think so either. It shouldn't be, but it's perceived to be. One quote I found interesting was from one ESPN employee who said, "If you're Republican or conservative, you feel the need to talk in whispers." That's even a fear, you know, and I'm script the rest of the quote, but I found that interesting that, and the ombudsman said it as well, that a lot of more right-leaning people at ESPN are uncomfortable or nervous with any of their expressing any of their views for fear of just being alienated.
Well, the Canadian and the American situations, I think, are different, because I would argue that the Canadian media, generally speaking, I'm talking the broadcasters and just where people get their sports. I would say that we don't tend to be as polarized here.
No, that's true.
And here, you know, Bruce Arthur really leans left. And if you go to his Twitter feed, you know, he writes for the Toronto Star. He's particularly left in his views.
Yeah, Dave Feschuk, same way.
I don't see Feschuk. I wouldn't see it that way at all.
Like, Feschuk, you haven't been on, like, someone who's on the Breakfast Club with him on a regular basis. Now, he's not at... He's not a liberal, though.
He's talking sports.
No, he'll trust me. He'll if you listen on TSN on Naylor and Landsberg, he does lean left. He's just not as vocal politically as, say, Bruce.
Here's one of the things that drives me nuts about the question itself, and that's it doesn't allow for complexity. It really only rewards cartoonish versions of either side. Mm-hmm. Like Michael Wilbon, I think, is a perfect example of what I mean. He is, if you talk about things like violence in sports, so he thinks football's gotten too soft. He talks a lot about how the game has lost its edge, how defensive players can't do anything anymore. And he likes the game less than the game he grew up with, a Chicago kid, the Bears, the Monsters of the Midway.
Yep.
And that would be a traditionally what we call a quote-unquote conservative view of sport. Let the guys hit each other as hard as they want, within reason. So is he a conservative guy? Not really, because on matters of race... You know, he'll talk to NBA players and he's quick to pick up the player's point of view. He's quick to analyze things in terms of a more subversive than maybe a mainstream point of view when it comes to race. My real point about this is in the media, a good writer should be able to be both at any given time. This idea that you have to be polarized and always have one kind of view that fits a menu of qualities and attributes.
Yes.
And you would never say anything on the other side. I aspire to that. You know, I love violence in sports. I love the UFC. I love my boxing, and even though I worry a lot about concussions, I do think that things like hitting shouldn't be afraid of hitting, because contact sports require contact.
Yeah, we know, in a perfect world.
But I support you can play.
Yes, of course. A perfect world has a bit of both. Here's what I would like to see from people that are much more left-leaning is pieces being pro-owner, because owners aren't, you know, 100% evil. And I think we demonize, and when, like, this, my number one issue, though, in sports that I hate is owners using taxpayer money. So that's the thing. It's like to fund stadiums. In some ways, I will rip owners to death. On the other end, I won't treat them as the boogeyman.
And well, I just don't like the knee-jerk reaction that anything an owner does must be bad.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's out there. And that's, you know, just the antagonism against the owner would be considered, and, you know, generalizations sometimes fit, sometimes don't, but would be more of a left-leaning belief.
Here's one of the neat things about sports, and maybe this is the more important question than is it left or right, but should any of that matter?
Mm-hmm.
Because I know for me, sometimes I love the fact that we deep dive into issues that are social and political and use sports as our entry point.
Yeah.
And sometimes I wish that I didn't have to think about that and I could just really enjoy the ascent of Mitch Marner and William Nylander and not have to think about concussions. And I don't think that's an illegitimate position, because the reason that sports exists is because life is hard and sports is fun to watch.
Yeah.
And in a lot of ways, the conversation we just had is a think piece for the Atlantic. But I don't always want a think piece for the Atlantic. I really love nachos and a close fourth quarter.
Yeah, and one of those you can't have anymore. and in the playoffs, at least in the NBA,
with the Raptors, I didn't have that either.
Yeah, I didn't have either. I think, you know, my final thought on this is I get when fans get angry when sports gets too political. And listen, I don't believe in the whole stick to sports thing, but I understand why fans do it, because it's, just to build on your point, it's an escape. You have a job, a mortgage, you've got kids to worry about. Sometimes you just want to watch the game and you want to watch a college football game and you don't want to hear, you know, Dave Zirin talk over and over again about how the players are exploited and slavery imagery comes pounding at you. Sometimes you just want to watch the goal line stand.
The question for me, and this is my final point on this, is whether we accept journalism is inherently subversive and therefore journalism of any investigative sort is liberal, because it's there to question power structures that exist. It's there to unearth things that are unfair.
A check and balance towards power.
100%. That's a beautiful way to put it. And so maybe because in sports now we expect it to sound more like other forms of journalism where it's not good enough to have the box score anymore. And it's not good enough just simply to say, here's how the power play works. It's got to be much more explosive than that. So in the world of hot takes, maybe we shouldn't be surprised that sports is starting to polarize in that way.
Mm-hmm.
Because those hot takes work in other parts of life. I mean, Fox would love for this to be true. Fox Sports would love to drive a partisan wedge between it and ESPN and present itself as the champion of the common man and the champion of common sense sports. They would love that if it were true.
Versus the lefty elitist over at ESPN.
But talking to people who work at ESPN, some of them vote conservative, some of them vote liberal. I guess really my point is, what do you want your sports media to be? And sometimes to a detriment, it becomes about issues.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes it's thrilling that it's that. I just would like to leave it as, and maybe this is a wish.
Fair and balanced.
That's ridiculous and impossible words. I would just like to believe that to call something progressive doesn't inherently mean that a conservative couldn't see the value in it. I just hope that that's true.
Agreed.
Done?
Done.
All right. So are we actually done the podcast? We must be up at an hour.
Yeah, we're just a little bit over an hour. Thank you, everyone, for listening. You can catch us on Audio Boom. And also, we are now on iTunes. Please subscribe. If you like the show, rate it. If you don't like the show, go suck a lemon and don't tell anyone. It's my final thoughts for the show.
Also, if I can, up on the Strombo show.
Oh, yeah.
YouTube channel. There is a new episode of The House of Strombo with Against Me, which is amazing. And I highly recommend you check it out on YouTube. Just type in The Strombo Show, subscribe to it, watch it, enjoy it. Let me know what you think of it. Very, very impressed with what came out of that performance. So it was really cool. I hope you dig it.
And very smart of him not to say, type in The Strombopolis Show, just The Strombo Show. Much, much easier to do.
So Maddie, next time I'm here, we can talk about the diet, because I'll be in full swing.
Oh, I can't wait. Just your misery factor.
It's going to be so bad.
You think you're going to make it?
Maybe I'm going to make a necklace out of this McChicken squeeze top bottle.
You can't do it. You have to clear everything from your house that is a distraction or that'll tempt you.
Listen to this. Even on the sticker on the front of this bottle.
Yeah.
Mayonnaise style sauce.
Oh! And by the way, style is spelled with three Z's. Mayonnaise styles. Goodbye, Bob.
Bye, Matt.